In our first interview today, I want to talk about applying design thinking to the world of medicine. As you may know, we're privileged to have an incredible design facility located at the University of Cape Town in the Hasso Plattner School of Design Thinking Africa, D-School Africa, as it's commonly known. It's not only an incredibly eye-catching building, it's a place where creative minds apply their skills and learning to very practical challenges in the world. And recently, this led to an interesting collaboration between D-School and the university's medical facilities. They asked whether students could help improve one of the most hated medical devices in creation, namely the speculum. Now, any woman who has ever undergone a pap smear will tell you how much we dread those cold, clammy, duck-billed intruders. So why has the design remained practically the same since it first came into use in the 1870s? Well, why indeed, asked the D-School. Let's talk a little bit about how they answered that question. With me on the line is, we've got two guests, in fact, one joining us by phone, Anne van Niekerk, who is a facilitator at the D-School, and then joining us via Zoom, and I'm hoping the line is keeping up with us, Dr. Fazila Khumalo, who is a research scientist in UCT's Division of Medical Virology. To both of you, a very warm welcome to the show, and thanks for your time today.
Thank you, Pippa.
Yes, from the D-School also, thank you.
I'm going to start with you, if I may, Fazile. Many of our female listeners will be all too familiar with the speculum and not in a good way. I do appreciate, though, we have men tuned in today as well. So for their sake, can I ask you just to start by explaining what it's used for and for how long we've been using the existing design, give or take?
Thank you, Pippa. So it is mainly used for to conduct a pelvic exam, and this would be done by anyone from your gynecologist or a midwife to get specimen, usually for a pap smear or if they are looking at other things. Unfortunately, nothing has changed. It still basically performs the same function that it has since the beginning of time, and no one has really looked at changing anything, and that is where my pain came from, that we have access to the best technologies, but some of the basic things that we as women unfortunately do not have a choice but to undergo have basically been ignored for the most part. So is there anything that we can do now with access to the resources that we have? And potentially, yes. This is what we wanted to find out.
Fantastic. I mean, Fazile, I think fair to say, you say women have no choice, but of course many women do make the choice not to go or not to go as often as they should because they don't like undergoing this, the use of this instrument. It's not comfortable. It feels very invasive. They dread the experience. And for some women, that means, I know I should go for a pap smear once a year, but I'm going to delay it by another year or maybe another year after that. Or altogether. Won't you just remind us why that is a very worrying thing to do? Because that test is there for a very good reason, not so.
Yes. So, for example, the 4th of March is the awareness of HPV, which is a viral human papilloma virus that infects a lot of sexually active people. However, if in some cases it can lead to the development of cancers. Mm. And for a lot of women, if it's caught early, it can be treated and it never has to develop into cancer. And for a lot of women's health, a lot of work into the prevention being better than cure is what we have been trying to advocate for. But if the systems that are currently in place and make it a barrier itself to get those preventative treatments, then what is it that we are trying to tell them? That yes, you should, and your safety or your comfort is not a priority to us as long as you get this done. So what we are trying to say is that, you know, we can cover a lot by making sure that we put the woman first. So if it is an invasive procedure, are there ways around that? And as a scientist, you know, we always asking ourselves, what else is there? What else can we do differently? But now we get into the point of saying, actually, it's not just about me being able to redesign something in the lab, but also what do women feel needs to change? Because it could be that some of them are like, actually, I don't mind the pinch or the sound that the speculum makes, but it is the fact that I am forced to do this. And is there a way around that? So just understanding that, so that when we build the next generation of it, we already can factor in all of those things. And the next generation might come with an overhaul of how gynecological teaching is done, so that it is more woman-centered and less on the on the devices, or less on what they're trying to do at that point. So that understanding is something that we totally don't get and we don't spend any time on. And that's what I would like to see more innovations looking at. And this is why I think partnering with the design school was so important, so that we can look at the other side of things.
Thank you for that, Fazila. Let's bring in the design school now. Anne van Niekerk, as I mentioned, is a design thinking program lead and coach at the D school. And Anne, so Fazila came to you and said, I want us to put heads together on this. Let's see whether some design thinking could be applied to the challenge of a not particularly appealing process and instrument to make it a different experience for the patient. What was your next step? How did you go about getting your students involved?
Well, thank you, Pippa. I think firstly, it was a question of formulating the challenge correctly. Mm-hmm. So, because that really is a starting point from which to launch any design thinking program. So I had a visit with Fazile firstly to see what the facility was like, and then also just to get some details on what was the topic of conversation, what were the real pain points.
Yeah.
And then once we had our challenge in place, we had something called a design dash. And a design dash really is a very short introduction to design thinking. So in terms of the spectrum and in terms of how much exposure you have to design thinking, the design dash really is probably first steps. So it was a 2.5 hour program that we did with, I think it was approximately 16 members who work at the IDM. And we set them off on plotting a challenge right at the start and then taking them through the design thinking program. So, yeah, just a very quick run through it.
Okay. And we're talking here about quite senior students. Sorry, Anne, for those who don't know, when you say IDM, what are you referencing?
So that's the Institute for Infectious Diseases and Molecular Medicine. That's where Dr. Fazile works.
So that's the specific department within the medical school. Thank
yes.
you for that. Okay. So
yes.
So those students, all fairly senior level, postgrad, postdoctoral students, et cetera, put through this design thinking experience. And then I know they did a lot of sort of brainstorming amongst themselves and interviewing of each other of what has your experience been like. If you've been for a pap smear yourself, how did it feel? What did you like and not like? As a matter of interest, you had a mixed group of students. How did the male students engage with that topic? And what did you observe about their response to what their female cohort were telling them?
Well, firstly, I must say well done to the two gentlemen who did attend. I thought it was very brave of them.
Yeah.
But we put them into groups, so manageable groups of four. And I think from the get-go, we need to mention that the person, the user in a case like this, someone who really lies at the center of this challenge, is somebody that we'd like to use as a person whom we interview. So we're very grateful to three volunteers within our group who were willing to move into another group to be interviewed. So, you know, there's a lot of vulnerability that goes yeah. with that. But I think that the response from the males and their participation in the workshop was absolutely amazing. I think, neither of them, I don't think, have been for one of those exams. But just seeing their response and how easily how empathetically they engaged with the topic and with the people in their group and respectfully, I was really impressed with the input from them.
I'm glad to hear that. Now, Anne, the million-dollar question is, what did they come up with? Did anybody come up with ideas that you looked at and thought, well, this could potentially be an improvement, something worth taking to prototype?
Yes, absolutely. So I think from the get-go, it might be important to mention what it was that surfaced as issues. For example, lack of information beforehand, people going in for the procedure before they've had sufficient education about it. And I think on both the physical and the emotional fronts. Mm-hmm. Discomfort in terms, as we said, physically, but also the fact that it's so invasive, and then also the vulnerability in terms of how some of these people are feeling. And what else emerged was possible judgment from the health professional side. And then in terms of solutions, we were amazed. There were really three teams. And two of the teams really came up with something similar, which was around initial self-exam. Yeah. And then if you realize, you know, there could be potential problems, then to take it to the next level. So that was really interesting. And, you know, the type of application that they used is something that women are familiar with once they head into the menstruation year. So it wouldn't be something that's entirely foreign. Okay. And the third one was an interesting, the use of a dye of sorts, and that there'd be an external screening option which can be hovered over the abdomen as one would do with ultrasounds, for example.
Sure.
So the prototypes were really very low fidelity, so made and built with pipe cleaners, pom-poms, cardboard, sucker sticks, glue, etc. So it was amazing what the teams came up with, and obviously the prototype is really beginning stages. But the idea being that the basics have been there, and they can potentially take this and iterate it further on next level or next rounds.
Fantastic. Let me bring Fazila back in at this point. Fazila, I mean, having had a look at what those students produced and the sort of their proposals on how to either redesign or get around entirely the use of the speculum, did you see anything that really excited you?
Yes, definitely. I think when you have such talented individuals working on a specific solution, there's always some brilliance that's going to come out. And unfortunately at this point, because we would like to continue on this project, we're not going to delve further into what the designs are going to entail at this point, as it is something that it's a long-term passion project of mine specifically, that we would like to see in the, you know, as part of every woman's experience in the next couple of years. So there's definitely going to be the next generation that is going to be designed, but also bring in the people who are supposed to use these devices on women. So the different voices being heard and being, you know, part of the process is what I think is going to come out on, you know, allow us to build a device or non-device actually on the other side that speaks to everything that women experience, but also on the healthcare perspective. So I'm looking forward to what's coming next.
Thank you so much, Dr. Fazila Khumalo, research scientist at UCT's Division of Medical Virology. And I'm going to put the last question to you, if I may, and take it outside the scope of this particular project. Before I do that, sorry, a message just popping onto my WhatsApp screen, which is directly relevant to this project, from somebody who says she finds pap smears incredibly painful, so much so that her GP had to ask her not to shout so loudly because she was upsetting other patients. She says it's not just about the cold spatula. I've also had the plastic one. But, you know, there is a concrete example of why it's so important to be looking at alternatives, because we don't want a woman like that to be scared away from having absolutely essential preventative testing and screening, because the process involved is unpleasant for her. So I love the fact that you've come up with solutions that could potentially be developed further. My question really is, on a broader scale, is this the kind of sort of cross-departmental collaboration that the design school hopes to do more of? Because it strikes me, of course, the medical school is full of examples of things that could be improved upon, but so too probably is every other department in the university, sitting with problems that could take a creative mind engaging with improving their tools or whatever it may be. Are you a very collaborative sort of approaching department in this way?
Very much so. And I think with us under the umbrella of UCT really puts us in a position where we have access to, and where the departments and the faculties have access to us. Being based on Middle Campus, we are really quite easy to reach. Mm-hmm. And over the past few years, since our inception in 2015, we really have been collaborating as a priority with UCT. And really trying to introduce as many students as we possibly can, whether it be on a first-year level or all the way through to their postgraduate studies, at some point to design thinking. So whether it be Design Dash, as we did with the IDM, or whether we take them through a whole foundation program, that is our ultimate aim. So really to teach students the technique, but not only the technique and the tools, but also the mindsets that are associated with design thinking. Mindsets such as when you're designing for somebody, the human must be at the center of your design, because at the end of the day, regardless of what you design, there's always somebody who's going to be using that design. So trying to get diverse groups involved, making your solutions tangible, testing with people, getting feedback, etc. So, yeah, we are super excited at being involved at the university and just seeing every year our footprint and our spread just grow more and more.
And Vanika, thank you so much for joining us today. I think it's wonderful the way it's almost like sort of bringing in the best elements to make up a team that can solve problems from multiple perspectives. I really love that sense of, well, medical students can identify the problem, but not necessarily solve in practical terms. So bring in the design thinking from a different element, a part of the varsity, to help boost those skills and problem solving abilities. I think it makes an awful lot of sense. So I hope you'll keep in touch with us, Anne, and let us know about future examples of this kind of cross-departmental collaboration. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. Again, to Dr. Fazila Kumalo, research scientist at the Division of Medical Virology, and Anne Van Niekerk, facilitator at the Design School.